This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, October 27th. I'm Angela Denning. Governor Bill Walker decided yesterday to include Southeast Alaska's pink salmon into a request for a federal disaster declaration. The Walker administration is already seeking disaster declarations for commercial pink salmon fisheries in Prince William Sound, Kodiak, Chignik, and the Lower Cook Inlet. Like Southeast, they all fell below their pink harvest forecasts for this year, as well as five-year averages. In Southeast, the catch this year was about 18 million pinks, well below the 34 million forecast. Walker decided to tack on Southeast to the list after Sitka Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins and Ketchikan Representative Dan Ortez requested it. In a letter to the lawmakers, the governor stated that the Southeast pink salmon fisheries suffered a 36.1% loss of revenue this year compared to the recent five-year average. It takes a 35-80% loss in order for the National Marine Fisheries Service to consider disaster relief. A disaster declaration could lead to federal funding or other aid for people involved in the fisheries. The first month of the fall Dungeness crab season is off to a slow start in Wrangell and Petersburg. Adam Mesmer is a shellfish biologist for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Yeah, the catch is slightly down. We're right around 68,000 pounds for this year, but there's definitely less permits fishing than we had last year.
The season began on October the 1st. Three districts within the Petersburg management area brought in about 88,000 pounds around the same time last year. The numbers of permits fished are down at just 28 permits. The average is 45. Mesmer says this year's predictions for the summer and fall seasons were also below average, continuing a downward cycle.
It's kind of towards the bottom end. We're definitely kind of coming off a cycle, it seems. In 2013, we had a really good fall year. 2014 was pretty decent, too. And then last year, it was down a bit. And, you know, this year's down a little bit, too. And it's kind of what you see with crab is cycles up and down.
The three districts brought in 140,000 pounds in fall of 2015, valued around $420,000. Mesmer says this year's slow start could change because seafood processors have 7 days to send in their totals.
You know, there could be still tickets in the mail and on their way to getting entered. So it's pretty fluid looking right now. Those numbers definitely aren't set in stone.
The price at the docks is $3.10 per pound, up 8 cents from 2015. The season comes to a close on November the 30th. Petersburg's Rain Country Quilters are always busy making quilts for family, friends, and sometimes to sell, but a new volunteer project will likely take them years to complete, making over 100 quilts for local veterans. I caught up with the quilters at their recent show at Oktoberfest.
So excited. Oh my God.
A handful of quilters are chatting in the lobby of Petersburg High School.
Put together and added my own border.
We are surrounded by dozens of quilts, hanging from the upstairs balcony, nearby walls, and draped over chairs. The room is vibrant with rich colors. Take a closer look and you see the texture of cloth and fine stitching. One of the quilts near the entrance is remarkably patriotic. The colors are red, white, and blue. It's part of Quilts of Valor, which is a national project to give handmade quilts to veterans. Carol Candle is a longtime member of the local quilters group, and she meets me to talk more about the project.
Here at the quilt show, this is one of the Quilts of Valor.
Yes.
Can you describe it?
This is called Toss Nine Patch, and it's a fun quilt to make because you have nine squares that you sew together, and then you cut them up and flip them around to make this design. And it's usually done pretty scrappy, lots of different fabrics. Cheryl Leakley sewed this one together, and Kim or Rita Roney has also been helping Kim with some of the quilting for the Quilts of Valor. And this one has not yet been awarded.
Okay, and I see there's some of the squares have some writing, some words, and then there's some fireworks in some of them, but definitely red, white, and blue.
Definitely, yes. And there are fabrics being made for this project by the major fabric companies. So that's what some of these are. They're definitely made with Quilts of Valor in mind. And I saw a thing on Alaska One last winter about this project with three well-known quilt teachers, and they did a sewing thing, and then also it was part of their fundraiser, but they interspersed on this video, they interviewed veterans and showed people who had never quilted before each making a quilt with one of these national quilt teachers. And the thing that touched me the most was hearing from the veterans themselves how much it meant to them. One of them said, "I would rather get a quilt from a civilian than a medal from the government for his service." And some of them are moved to tears. They can't talk. I know that happened here when one quilt was awarded. The man was just overcome with gratitude. So that's why we do it, because we want to show them that their service is not in vain, even if the war, especially Vietnam, was so unpopular. And one guy said we were spit on when we came home. So we want to do the opposite for them.
But you're not talking just one quilt this year?
No, so far we've awarded 12. Petersburg, it is estimated that we have about 100 veterans here, so we have a lot to go. But Kim Randrup is donating 4 quilts a month, meaning that she will quilt 4 quilts a month for us free of charge. Rain Country Quilters is providing batting and thread for the quilting. One thing that we could use in way of help is just money donations to buy especially backing fabric for quilts. That can get expensive because it's a big chunk of fabric, and we have had some fabric donations, but if people do want to help, a great way to donate help is towards buying backing fabric. And Kim Randrup will accept donations at her shop in the Joan May Building. She has a quilt shop where she does hair styling and cutting as well. So
this is kind of an ongoing project. There's no real deadline.
Exactly. This is ongoing. My goal is to get everybody that we know of covered and show them that we care. And then there will always be, like, the Coast Guard. We'd like to be able to show them our appreciation, especially after a rescue. So it will be ongoing, as I imagine we'll continue to have veterans moving to Petersburg. But it's been really neat to see the responses of the men as they've been awarded. And we have had one gal awarded a quilt. She was our first one, Annie Lewis, who grew up here. And she was in, I think it's a nurse's corps in World War II. So it's just been really special.
Carol Candle says that if people want to be involved but do not quilt, they can donate money to Rain Country Quilters for the backing of the quilts. And although red, white, and blue is the theme of Quilts of Valor, she says they would be happy to make a quilt that is not patriotic if a veteran would prefer that. Carol Candle can be reached at 772-3430. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. Deer Mountain was the topic of a series of emails this week, with some claiming the Ketchikan Gateway Borough Manager had been too helpful towards the Alaska Mental Health Trust. KRBD's Layla Carey has more from Ketchikan.
Deer Mountain is a sensitive subject in Ketchikan, especially right now with potential logging of the iconic site by Alaska Mental Health Trust Land Office, which owns the property. Public outcry was immediate when the Trust Land Office announced it might log Deer Mountain if a federal land exchange isn't approved by Congress in January. So when Borough Manager Dan Bockhorst sent an email to Alaska Mental Health Trust officials providing a link to some drone videos of selective logging on borough property and mentioning how slight the visual impact was of that logging, some took it as too helpful to the Trust Land Office. Bockhorst says the videos were out in the public anyway, and he thought they might come up during 2 November 1st public meetings that the Trust Land Office has scheduled in Saxman and Ketchikan. Bockhorst says his intent was to provide information.
If I didn't provide that information to the Trust Land Office, they could potentially come here to Ketchikan on November 1st and hear people speaking about these videos that were widely made available and have not had an opportunity to view those videos. So it's far as I'm concerned, what I did was not inappropriate, wasn't counter to any policy position by the Borough Assembly, but if others feel differently, that's their perspective.
Borough Assembly member Stephen Bradford does feel differently. He says Bockhorst shouldn't have taken it upon himself to help the Trust Land Office.
And I think that's a question that needs to be asked. Are the taxpayers who provide Mr. Bockhorst with his fine salary paying for him to help the Mental Health Trust in their preparation for that meeting? Or rather, should he be fighting for the citizens of the borough who have overwhelmingly stated that they do not want Longie on Deer Mountain?
So Bradford sent Bockhorst an email later that day expressing concern about that communication. Bockhorst then followed up with a second email to Trust Land Office officials clarifying his intent, and they wrote back.
It's clear to me that they never took it otherwise, as other than providing them with information.
Bradford argues that if the videos were out there in the public anyway, there was no need to direct Mental Health Trust officials to them. And he says there should not be any comparisons drawn anyway between Blank Inlet and Deer Mountain. For one thing, Bradford says, the parcel at the upper end of Blank Inlet is flat, and Deer Mountain, obviously, is steep, and the visual impact of logging would be more obvious.
But also the uses of the land are so different. Deer Mountain provides a watershed that creates a water supply for both Saxman and the city of Ketchikan. Deer Mountain has a heavily used public trail across it. Blank Inlet has none of these items.
And Bradford says the Trust Land Office has said it would consider traditional methods of logging, such as clear cuts, in addition to selective harvest. Bockhorst says he completely agrees that Deer Mountain cannot be compared with Blank Inlet, and he supports a general planning effort to protect viewsheds in the community. Bradford says he doesn't plan to take further action on the email issue. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And a Mental Health Trust meeting on proposed logging here in Petersburg is planned for tonight. That'll be 7 to 9 p.m. at the Sons of Norway Hall. Longtime Skagway Assemblyman Dan Henry resigned his seat last week, less than 1 month before he must report to prison. In February, Henry pleaded guilty to federal tax charges. KHNS's Emily Files has more from Haines.
Henry was absent from the last two assembly meetings, leaving the question of whether he planned to resign up in the air. That question was finally answered at Thursday's meeting.
We did receive a resignation from Assemblyman Henry.
Henry wasn't there, so Mayor Mark Schaefer read from his letter, which Henry addressed to Borough Clerk Emily Deitch.
Emily, please inform the mayor and assembly that as of today, I'm resigning from the city Skagway City Assembly, and please relay to all that has been my pleasure and most profound honor to serve on the council and assembly for the last 20 years. I believe Skagway to be in the best position financially in its existence with a bright future ahead. I would like to feel that I may have aided in the evolution and hope Skagway's continued growth and prosperity. Best regards, Dan Henry. And we wish him luck. And what he's facing.
What he's facing is a year and a day in federal prison and possible penalties from the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Henry's case came to light early this year when he was convicted of willful failure to timely file federal income tax returns. He pled guilty to four misdemeanor charges after 2 years of plea deal negotiations. Henry is the owner of the Skagway Fish Company restaurant. According to court documents, he failed to file his income taxes from 2004 to 2012. He also failed to disclose any annual income over $1,000 on years of financial disclosure reports to APOC. Henry was ordered to pay more than $600,000 in restitution to the IRS. In September, a judge sentenced him to a year and a day in prison. At that hearing, Henry gave an explanation for his behavior, saying he struggled with drinking and gambling that led to a number of financial losses. there may be more repercussions on the way for Henry. An APOC case involving his incomplete filings is set to go before the commission at its regular meeting Tuesday. APOC staff recommended a fine of $22,000 for the violations. The commission is set to make a final decision on the penalty Tuesday. In the months since his case became public, Henry never publicly addressed the situation at assembly meetings, although he did write a letter to the editor in the local newspaper. As is the case for this story, Henry has not returned KHNS's request for comment. Although Henry didn't speak about the matter at assembly meetings, some residents did. Several people called on him to step down from elected office. Bob Carlson spoke at a meeting in August.
I believe the assembly members should be of the highest character and moral. I feel that you failed me and our community too.
Carlson was one of a few residents who asked Henry to resign in time for his seat to be placed on the October 4th municipal election ballot. But that did not happen. Now the mayor will appoint someone to the seat Henry vacated. Henry has been ordered to report to a federal prison facility to serve out his sentence by November 1st. In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
And I'm Angela Denning. This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. Thanks for listening.